This Jocks 94.5 podcast is brought to you by Millennium Satellite and Video. Log on to msvnow.com. TV excellence everywhere. That's Millennium.
Three Man Front.
One of those games from around the SEC, Cole Kublik was there in Athens for G-Day. Lots of anticipation, I would say. Optimism there in Athens, Georgia, Cole, just based on, before we get into what happened in the game, just kind of the setting and the tenor of folks that you talked to around the program and maybe some fans about what they expect from Kirby and the Bulldogs this season.
No, I mean, I think you start first and foremost with just having more people in the stands, and everybody's excited about that. You know, you look at being able to pack that thing in. I mean, I talked to Josh Brooks, the athletic director. He said that they're gunning for 100% in the fall, so going to continue to try to ramp that up. And then we know how they've recruited. Only Alabama has recruited better than Georgia the last four cycles, and they got a lot of talent. They know who their quarterback is now. That makes them very different from what they were this time a season ago. And they got some playmakers, and they got some guys up front, especially on defense, that make them a little bit different than a lot of other teams in the SEC. So good reason for excitement there in Georgia. A little more staff continuity, obviously. Offensive staff been together for an extra year. That'll be able to help them out some. So, I mean, they're my favorite to win the East, and I think they'll see Alabama in the SEC championship game again.
Yeah, meanwhile, Brian Denny, Pat, anticipated they were going to have 50% capacity, which we talked about leading up into Saturday. And, I mean, Alabama's spring attendance, as they typically do, they were able, Cole, to, you know, put people in there. You saw the anticipation. And if you think that the interest is lost or Alabama fans are tired or they're just going to show up when the season starts, Saturday was another good reminder that they've not gone anywhere, and there's lots of storylines and lots of intrigue. Of course, everyone wanting to see Bryce Young, maybe some of those other future stars, guys that have waited their turn to see how they were going to play. One of those guys, and we talk about him, but I mean, I was blown away by just the athleticism that we got from Ajay Hall. Ajay Hall, just amazing. That guy, what he was able to do. I had heard great things about him. Of course, he was a Tampa guy who had actually transferred in to Tampa there in high school. But, man, we start thinking about who's Alabama going to replace at the skill positions? Woo! Well, they got some talent. We knew about Mechie and some of those other cats that were there. But Ajay Hall, the unbelievable athleticism and ability this kid has. I think he turned a lot of heads on Saturday, Cole.
Yeah, kind of unfortunate that you had 20 players out for health reasons. And you wanted to see some of those guys compete. They wanted to get their opportunity to kind of show what they could do in that setting. At the same time, now you got to see a few other guys maybe get more meaningful reps, and Ajay Hall was one that really showed out. I mean, the athleticism, the catch radius, obviously the hands. I mean, it just he's going to be one of those guys that's going to fill the void of, you know, these first round receivers that have left each of the last few seasons. And it wasn't just him. I mean, Cam Latu looked good. I think he's going to be a guy that can help. I mean, he's a little bit more the old school tight end, but obviously runs extremely well. I think he'll help him a little bit more in line as a blocker, but someone who obviously can get down the field with that 59-yard touchdown. It was an impressive day for some of the young skill that's going to be replacing a few of the all-time greats.
It's our train hot and cold of the weekend. Like we say, it's hard to stop a train. You can't stop a dream. So my hot of the weekend, it comes from the Braves and the Cubs series, a 36-year-old utility player named Sean Casmar. He pinch hit during the fifth inning, got out, but he made history. His parents were there, and his wife flew in. Pretty cool to see. The takeaway from this, he hasn't played in the majors since September 23rd of 2008. Yes, that is 12 years, 206 days since his most recent big league appearance, which in turn was the longest stretch in between Major League Baseball games since Minnie Minoso resurfaced in 1976 at the age of 50, Cole, according to Elias Sports. But it was really cool to see his family flying in, sitting there in Wrigley, and you saw the Cubs players appreciating it too, and David Ross said that's what makes our sport so much fun and so cool.
Yeah, really cool to see. Just how that whole thing played out over the weekend.
For me, guys, hot was the Utah spring game. Why? Charlie Brewer made one heck of an impression. He went a perfect 15 for 15, the transfer quarterback from Baylor, threw for 151 yards and two touchdowns. He was one of the more experienced quarterbacks, graduate quarterbacks in this last cycle, but he decided to go to Utah, and of course he made a quite of an impression again. 15 of 15, 151 yards, two touchdowns for the Utes. So it'll be interesting to see. He's still got a quarterback competition on that team for the fall, but at least for one Saturday, it looked like Utah has got something brewing at their quarterback position for the fall.
Hot for me over the weekend, which, you know, by the way, Jake Bentley down at South Alabama now. So Charlie Brewer, who had some success at Baylor, they're going to have a chance to now get it going with Utah. Alabama A&M, they win the Magic City Classic 38-14. They also win the SWAC East. So they'll meet Arkansas Pine Bluff in the SWAC title game on May the 1st. And just another impressive performance by Akeem Glass. And we mentioned him last week with Jay Walker. Obviously had his coach on as well. But in three games this year, Glass has gone for 1,039 passing yards and 13 passing touchdowns. Also over the weekend, San Diego or South Dakota State won the Dakota Marker 27-17. First home loss for North Dakota State since 2016, which also came from South Dakota State. And this one hurts a little bit, but Garrett Cole, another solid outing, now has 38 strikeouts through four appearances this year. It is the most strikeouts through his first four appearances in a Yankee uniform in a single season, and still not enough to get a win. So Garrett Cole's been great. The Yankees are not very good. And then finally, the Spring League. It's football. A couple new head coaches in the Spring League. Don't know if you guys saw this. The Conqueros. Jerry Glanville going to take over as head coach.
Nice.
Okay.
And the lineman, Hal Mummy, going to be the head coach of the lineman there in the Spring League. So Spring League getting
some.
That's
your team. It's got to be, right?
I mean, it's not that kind of lineman, I don't believe. But, yeah, sure.
Oh.
I mean, when I first saw it, I was like, how cool would it be if the Spring League just consisted of a team full of linemen? And that's all I could, all
linemen,
could have. Yeah.
Yeah,
just, let's go. I'd be for that.
So
but
it's defensive linemen?
Big guy running a skinny post? Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, I mean, I think it's kind of like lineman day that we have. I don't know what day that is, but we like to pretend like it's offensive lineman day. But, yeah, it's more the workers. Correct.
Work at Alabama Power and
yes.
Keep us up and running. Oh, well, that. I guess that makes more sense.
We've seen a kicker that could be in lineman, so that could work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, on that note, finally, we talked a lot about VMI here on this program a couple of weeks ago. We even had their head coach on the show. Guys, from 2004 to 2018, VMI went 28-128. Again, from 04 to 18, 28-128. They had 2 years that they were winless in that span. They just went 6-1, and they won the SoCon, and they're in the FCS playoffs. And that's with Seth Morgan, their backup quarterback, who just went for 328 over the weekend. So pretty impressive job there for the Keydets.
JT Daniels, 28 of 41, Cole, 324 yards, three touchdowns. No George Pickens. He's out. He had the surgery. We expect to see him at some point during the fall. I was talking about, is Georgia being undersold? I go back to the quarterbacks and what the quarterbacks are going to look like across the room. If you're ranking top to bottom, I know Matt Corral is going to be in the conversation. Bryce Young, he's going to be there in the top five. You can mix or match a couple of other quarterbacks. But to me now, and I know it's a small sample size, but I would say JT Daniels, number one quarterback in the SEC coming into 2021.
I mean, he and Matt Corral are going to be there. I think just because Matt Corral played an entire season, you may have to bump him ahead. And listen, Matt Corral had some bad games. The Arkansas game was ugly. Beginning of the bowl game was ugly. But I think right now, you know, based on body of work and based on what Matt Corral did last season, going over 3,300 yards, 29 touchdowns, he probably has to be QB1. I absolutely believe that Bryce Young has a chance to ascend that. I think JT Daniels has a chance to ascend that. And I think if it's Mac Johnson at LSU, if it's Miles Brennan at LSU, they both have a chance. I think that's less likely, but they both have an opportunity to potentially be there. But you know, Matt's played the most of any of them, and he had a lot of success, so I think you probably have to bump him ahead right now.
Yeah, and in the reports, Pat, coming out of Baton Rouge, you're talking, of course, just talking about Max Johnson, who came on there late in the year and really showed what he could do. Miles Brennan out with the injury, but that's going to be an interesting quarterback race because all reports and the way that it was reported, both had really, really good days. Coach O was happy, kind of got the offense back to where we expected it prior to last season, maybe more of what we saw from 2019 schematically, not necessarily personnel-wise, but it was a little bit of a different format down there with their quarterbacks and kind of swapping teams and kind of that funkiness we see with the structure and the format of some A-Day games or spring games from past years.
Yeah, everybody got to play, especially the quarterbacks, got to play for either the white or the purple team. Johnson was 11 for 17 passing for the purple team, and he finished the day for 180 yards, two touchdown passes. Brennan, he was a combined 12 of 20 passing for 116 yards and one touchdown. Again, both of those guys, it was interesting seeing that one had better numbers playing for that set of that team, the purple team, and then they would go over to the white team, and they were not that successful. Again, it has to do with who you're throwing to, what kind of offensive line you have. But it all appears, and Matt Moscona told this on Friday, that this is going to be a two-person quarterback competition come the fall between Johnson and Brennan. So, and what you saw on Saturday gave you no indications that it was going to be anything different than that.
Well, and is there any chance, Cole, that we see two quarterbacks? Just there's no separation, both of those guys, maybe they offer different things, or will it be ultimately one named over the other? Because it looks like right now there's not really any separation, with Miles Brennan being the more experienced guy, being in that system longer.
Yeah, I don't know about two. I mean, obviously, if you have two who can play, maybe you try to figure it out. But I don't know if that's truly going to be advantageous for LSU. I mean, I think you would want to have a guy, you would want to name a guy. And keep in mind, we've sort of dealt with this going into the 2018 season. I think there were like six quarterbacks on the roster. Joe Burrow comes in, he's beating him out. One guy leaves, the next guy leaves, and then you know, there's only two left. And, you know, Miles Brennan was one of those guys. So I don't think Coach O is going to play two. I think he'll name a starter. I don't know exactly when that'll be. I thought that it might be after the spring, but because those two are as close as they are, I think that'll carry over into the fall. I think they'll have a one and a two, and then they'll just kind of go from there.
Auburn, Brian Harsin, some fans got a sneak peek when they were open to practice or had practice open up to them earlier in the spring. Of course, the big storyline there was Bo Nix. What was that offense going to look like? How much progression, how much different would Bo Nix looked in it? And I think that Brian Harsin and Auburn fans who either watched it on SEC Network Plus through the ESPN app or were there in person, Cole, they did see progression with Bo Nix, and Brian Harsin talked about it. And I don't think he was pumping sunshine with just some of the decision-making. And to be honest, I think it was scripted. The first play that you saw, and what is the question mark, and kind of the running joke with Auburn fans about the tight end position. When are we going to see it? Then you see it in the very opening play when Bo Nix finds Jake Fromm's brother, who is now a junior. We have not heard much from, but catching that pass. I thought that was deliberate by not only Mike Bobo, but also Brian Harsin as to what we can expect from this offense in 2021.
Yeah, I think even more so than Bo Nix, just the difference in the offense was what stuck out to me. And it's going to be, listen, we knew Tank Bigsby was the guy going in. I don't think anybody doubted that. There was nobody who would say that, oh, yeah, this is going to run through Bo Nix or be a pass-heavy offense. I mean, Tank's going to be the guy that this offense goes through. And you got to see a little bit of that, but also different formations. Bo Nix was under center a little bit. You got to see the tight end usage, like you mentioned. And then I think, too, there were some things that Bo Nix did. Obviously, from a progression standpoint, maybe a little bit of patience in the pocket. Wasn't always there, but you got a little bit more, so you hope that he's getting back closer to being the quarterback that he needs to be in that Auburn offense. But it'll be much more balanced. It'll be one that I think Auburn fans are going to have an appreciation for that does change, does adapt, does look different at times. I mean, you saw sort of the mid-zone play now that's going to take away from some of the inside zone they've run in the past. You'll still get the outside zone, the stretch play, the heavy play action. And, you know, I think you saw a couple of guys outside of Tank that might be able to help you a little bit. I mean, Shivers, he might end up being a decent little fit in that offense because sometimes with zone stuff, you know, the backs can get hidden behind that offensive line. Then you make a late cut north and south and, you know, you're able to really get yards that way. So it was a good day for the Auburn spring. I mean, I wasn't blown away by anybody, but I thought the offensive line had one of their better days of the spring, and it showed. That's a group that's got to come around. If they're going to be competitive, that group's got to find a way to play good football consistently. Still think they have an issue, especially at one spot, particularly right tackle, but you got time to get that shored up.
And just kind of going back from the attendance that you saw inside of Sanford Stadium and we saw on television, especially at Alabama and then at Auburn, you know, there were a lot of folks that were interested. They wanted to see what Brian Harsin and this version of the Auburn Tigers would look like. But how much different was it just being in the stadium? I realized that there wasn't a ton of fans and you were able to do that all last season and there were limited fans that were there, but was there a big difference that you could tell just based on the folks that were in the stands and kind of the setting and maybe how the team reacted? Was there any, I don't know, obvious enthusiasm? Was it different than what we've seen in the past? And were you surprised by the numbers, whether good or bad for Georgia?
It wasn't really different. I mean, there's a few more people than what I was used to. And I think the fans were just excited. Because it was so limited last year, fans were excited to just get back in there. And, I mean, there are a lot of fans that didn't get to go as many games as they went to normally. And so I think they're excited to be able to get in there and be a part of the game and be a part of their team. The weather was fantastic. I mean, the fans got pretty loud at times. I thought everybody in the stands were treating it like it was a real game. Definitely not treating it like practice, but it was an impressive setting, and there's a lot of exciting things on that particular team to watch. So I think as all of these things happen to us and we're able to get back in and we're able to be a part of things that we were normally a part of, we're going to be more excited about it, and there's probably going to be more people with interest because you just haven't been able to do it.
Cold for me is going to be just the injuries to the Atlanta Braves, and they're still able to take two out of three. Ronald Acuna, that's going to be the big point of concern, but also Max Fried, Inciarte, Drew Smyly, Sean Newcomb, and Chris Martin. Still, you're expecting Soroka to come back, but just to have that many injuries right now this early in the season, that's the cold for me, and hopefully, Pat, that improves.
Yeah, we'll wait and see the test results for Acuna a little bit later today. The cold for me, guys, I'm going to stick with a spring game. It's got to be what went on up in Nashville with Vanderbilt. The new Vanderbilt head coach, Clark Lee, got creative this spring in his attempt to send a message, I suppose, guys, to his football team that everything has got to be earned. Players actually have to earn their jersey numbers. That's right.
Oh, boy.
They did not have numbers on their jerseys playing the spring game. They had their names on the back of the jerseys. You've heard that before. You play for the name on front of your jersey, not your name on the back. But they had the names on the back. They did not have numbers. So if you can imagine, Cole, trying to cover that game, trying to keep up with who's doing well and who's in at this position and things of that nature. But, yeah, Clark Lee, no numbers on the Vanderbilt football jerseys for their spring game.
That would be great in film session. If it's like you're going to all 22 and somebody misses a block, you're like, that's not me.
My man.
Are you kidding?
Prove
me?
It. Me? Prove it,
yeah.
Coach.
Yeah.
That's not you right there. No, man.
But your number has to be earned, guys. Has to be earned. I think, if I'm not mistaken, legally you have to have a number when you're playing a football game.
No, technically not.
We've seen
Tuberville did that with the AU on the helmet. Tuberville did that. Like, you're not getting the logos until you prove it. It's like no one has their stickers on their helmet right now. I mean,
so some of the numbers we've gotten, though, the blend in with the jersey,
sitting around,
might as well just had names.
All right, just remember thinking, if some guy that's actually going to play just doesn't impress you through fall practice, you can throw him out there without a logo on his helmet. Come on.
You guys had to earn your way onto the practice field. You had to be.
We
on
did. We had
field.
To practice at the Emerald Field. Yes. You're going to earn the right to be on that practice field. When it's apparently he told the grounds crew he wanted to save the grass for late in the season. So, whatever. Cold for me, Grambling, 0-4 this year. First winless season since 1992. Oklahoma State Thunder on a 10-game losing streak. Have to throw that in as well as the Ohio State University in their spring game. Not sure if you guys saw this or are aware of this. But if you're looking for spring game ruse, look no further than the horseshoe where they didn't tackle. Yeah. They had a spring game that consisted of no tackling.
Well, just two hand, one hand. They had flags.
Well, you know, they didn't tackle a lot in the national championship game, so, I mean, didn't...
Keep it going.
Yeah.
Being in Athens, Georgia over the weekend, you know, tostadas a little different. They got the tostadas. They have the traditional Mexican fare, but also some of the things that are different that we like as well. And there's one thing that continued to stick out for me that's different about this Georgia roster and different about what this Georgia team might be this fall. And I kept coming away with just how physically imposing a lot of individuals are on this Georgia football team and just different. They have guys that don't look like regular college football players. And this might not mean that they win a ton of games. And they're not going to win a ton of games just because of this. But it's one thing that stuck out to me. And the first guy was Darnell Washington. We talked about him in the first segment of the show. And he missed a little bit of practice. I think he was out around 10 days during the spring. So when Kirby Smart tells us that he's 280, I'm thinking, oh, he's out of shape. Oh, he's gained some weight. It's not going to look good. You can find the picture that I posted of him on Twitter and why people see that picture and immediately want to respond to it and say, yeah, he's going to be a right tackle or he can't catch or he can't move, he can't run. Dude's not out of shape. I mean, he's probably got 32, 34-inch waist at 280 pounds, 6'7", and he actually did move and he did catch the ball. He had four catches in the game, got down the seam a little bit, showed he can run. I don't know how you match up with that. They lined him up out wide by himself a couple of times, and I'm thinking, what corner's going to take away a fade from him? And then I see freshman offensive tackle Amarius Mims at 6'7", 315. And I mean, maybe physically the best-looking tackle prospect I've seen in I don't know how long. I mean, 6'7", 315 and got a big old rear end and like no belly hanging over his belt, long arms. I mean, they have four offensive linemen that all have the potential to be starters that are over 6'6", 305. A couple of them 6'7", 320. I mean, you guys know about Jordan Davis, 6'6", 350 in the middle of that defense. You put him next to Devontae Wyatt at 6'3", 315. And they're different inside. They got a dude named Adam Anderson that's going to play some star for them. So essentially nickel that is 6'5", 230. 6'5", 230 going to play star on that defense. Now, not every down, not all the time. It'll be an early down star defender, but obviously has the ability to be able to run, to be able to play that. Amir Speed, cornerback, 6'3", 211. And I kept coming away with, I mean, this team is just built different. How many teams on their schedule, or how many teams that they might even potentially meet up with, are going to just physically be able to match up with what they have? Are going to have answers for the guys that they physically are going to be able to put on the field? And we all know Alabama will. I don't even know if Ohio State, or, I mean, I don't even know if Clemson week one, top to bottom, is going to have as many guys that are physically different as what they're going to bring to the table each and every week. So I understand you still got to have good quarterback play. You obviously need to be balanced. You need to do different things well. That doesn't mean you're going to be a good football team, but I think we know based on the talent, the way they've recruited, the guys they have that have proved themselves, they're going to be a pretty good football team. And then you add on top of that that just physically – they're going to be so different. They're going to offer so many different matchups in different ways that's going to give Georgia some big advantages coming up this fall. But Washington was the guy that really just, he kind of wowed me. Mims is going to be an excellent tackle prospect. I don't know if he starts week one, but I think he gets into that lineup and starts at some point this season. And they are going to be a team at the line of scrimmage. I mean, Kirby still believes you win games at the line of scrimmage. It's how he's recruiting. It's how he's building it. And, I mean, I know you mentioned John Fitzpatrick, 6'7", 255 at tight end. You know, he's going to help. He'll be a guy that they rely on. You know, Brock Bowers is a guy that Mike Griffin mentioned a couple of weeks ago, 6'4", 235. He'll be more their move tight end, a guy that sort of does the things that Billingsley does for Alabama. I'm not going to even say Kyle Pitts in that range, but just lines up different places like that. He has nowhere near the skill set that Pitts does, so don't mistake that. But just physically, Pat, they are a team that offers you a lot of different things that not a lot of teams on their schedule are going to be able to match up with.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, you got Clemson starting out. I mean, but after that, I mean, you just look at their overall schedule. It's tough to make an argument that you're going to go up against anybody else that possibly could line up in the trenches. Well, that was my question to you, Cole, in regards to their offensive line. We know what they have coming back from a defensive standpoint, and I know you tweeted out this weekend that, again, you know, the sky's the limit for the future on this offensive line. But at least going into the fall, I mean, what do you see as the weakness in regards to that offensive line?
Our continuity. I mean, I told you guys that Kirby, he and Dan Lanning ran everything. I mean, they were, and Alabama mixed some things up defensively a little bit in their spring game. Auburn didn't quite do as much. Most teams will just kind of sit there and base, but I mean, Georgia ran everything. And he told me at halftime, he said, listen, they're all on film, so why would we not run them? I mean, it's not like people don't know we run them, so let's go out there and practice them. Which I kind of appreciated his whole attitude towards their spring game. It wasn't, yeah, Jordan Davis is coming back. He's not going to play because he's played a lot of snaps. No, you're going to go compete. You're going to go play. I mean, the starters played almost the entire game. And the offensive line had some breakdowns. I mean, they missed just some of your basic twists. They missed, obviously, some pressures. And there were some times, no matter who the quarterback was, if it was Carson Beck, if it was Vandegrift, if it was Jackson Muschamp, I mean, there were guys under pressure every time. It wasn't just the second and third group. The first group had some breakdowns as well. Some of these guys hadn't really played together very much. Some of these guys, it's new and hadn't played a ton of college football, period. So I think the continuity, Pat, up front, you got a new center, Trey Hill's gone. Cedric Van Pron's probably going to be that guy. The communication's going to have to improve. The continuity up front with that group's got to improve. And I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe a more veteran group start against Clemson, and then some of the younger guys work their way in and have a different offensive line 4 or 5 weeks into the season. Because And the thing that'll help them is, I mean, you got a couple of physical backs like a Zamir White, and then you got all those tight ends that I mentioned, whether it's Bowers, Washington, Fitzpatrick. I think Clemson's going to see a heavy dose of 2 and 3 tight end sets from Coach Monken, mainly just to protect things early on and make sure that group's got a little extra help.
Also, on the defensive side of the ball for Auburn, as we just kind of keep going back and forth with some of the games that we saw, we got to see Derek Mason's defense. You knew the linebacker play was going to be there. There's questions about the defensive line. Of course, J.J. Pegues joining that group. But Cole, I thought for the most part, you saw an attacking style defense. You saw some different things that you didn't see under Kevin Steele. Not that it was bad. It was just schematically, it was a little bit different. And how Auburn played on Saturday, I don't know how much fans can take away from that.
I don't think Auburn did as much as Alabama did. And I don't know if I've seen a defense in the spring do as much as Georgia did. Kirby told me at halftime they only ran 2 pressures, and there's no way I'm buying that. And he kind of followed that up with, listen, it's on film. Whatever we had on film, we went ahead and said, go ahead, you got the green light to run it. And by God, Dan Lanning ran all of it. I mean, every twist, every stunt, every blitz, every pressure, every look, which I think is actually good, because one thing that Kirby emphasized to us is, listen, we're not going to get to this game in this setting and say, oh, well, there's no need to play this guy. There's no need to play that guy. If they're legitimately banged up, maybe we sit them out. But this is a chance to compete, so we want everybody to go out there and have that opportunity. I mean, Jordan Davis went almost the whole game. JT Daniels played the whole game. So Kirby is using this, and I think when you hear the way that he put it of, we have 24 practices left before we play Clemson. You got to take advantage of that. You got to get your guys opportunities and reps and work to be able to go out and be the best team that you're going to be able to be. So, you know, I appreciate it when a defense does a little bit more. I think obviously Derek being new, there, you kind of want to just make sure that the alignment and the assignment part are taken care of right now. But you saw, I mean, linebackers played great in that Auburn spring game. They look fantastic. You know, there's a few things about Pegues that you see and you're like, all right, he can help. He'll be a guy that can take up legitimate snaps for you this year. And, I mean, you saw the hands coming around a little bit. Technically, fundamentally, he's got a ways to go, but it's starting to come around. You saw a little bit of it. So I think Colby Wooden's a guy that stuck out that you say, okay, he can help. You know, 2 of your pass rushers weren't out there, so you don't know exactly what you have there because you think that they're going to be able to contribute off the edge. But, you know, all in all, I think the structure of the defense at Auburn looked fine.
Okay, and
hey, you had a guy in the secondary that didn't want to tackle anybody the last 3 games of last year that actually came up and tackled some folks. So that was good to see.
JT Daniels, I saw that something that you had put out there on social media, and it was not just about his play, but it was a chance that you guys had to kind of sit down with him in meetings. And what struck you most about JT Daniels, just with the interaction you had with Georgia's quarterback?
Well, I don't know if it's a I don't know if he's misperceived or if there is just no perception, or maybe people just don't care, or we didn't get enough of him that people just don't know. But I don't think anybody really knows what he's all about, and I think people see, you know, this high profile kid, this Southern California, you know, obviously played at USC, but then from Southern California guy with this weird haircut and this mustache, and they probably just think that he's, you know, your prototypical California kid, and he's not. He's not. He is all football. I mean, the kid has not, he hasn't taken a vacation. He hasn't left campus since he got there. And we talked to a safety and a wide receiver that both told us that he's in the building more than anybody else. And I think when one thing that JT did is he went through his film schedule each and every week with us. And I have never met with or talked to a college quarterback that was as detail-oriented or organized as JT Daniels. And Mac Jones was pretty close, because Mac, I mean, I've heard the stories and talked to people about, you know, these giant three-ring binders that he has for every team that he's competed against and how he still has them. Like, I mean, he took them down to Mobile for the Senior Bowl. And so I've talked to some guys that understand it, that get it, but JT, he takes it to the next level, the mental aspect of it. And I mean, he's sitting there telling us how he took some time this offseason to go study 2017 Alex Smith film because he wanted to watch his footwork, and he went through every game. I mean, I haven't heard other quarterbacks do those kind of things. Like, I haven't heard anybody in any position go back and do those kind of things while they're in college. So I think mentally he's much more advanced than people give him credit for. I think football means a lot more to him than a lot of people believe. And it's a fun conversation too. I mean, he told us about playing in the Pac-12. You know, he told us that the COVID crowds that he had last year were louder than any Pac-12 stadium he played in. He's like, you guys got to understand, when I got to USC, I played the spring game, there were 500 people there. That's USC. You know, he said, when I played in the Pac-12, I didn't see an entire season. I didn't see a 6'5", 6'6", 265, 270-pound outside linebacker that ran 4.5. He's like, I get two or three of those every game. I got three or four of those on this roster that I practice against every day. You know, and then I think, too, just his background. Like, I don't think people understand that. I mean, this dude was the Gatorade National Player of the Year after his junior year, where he took his high school, one of the best high school programs in America, to an undefeated season, and then went to USC. He didn't play his senior year of high school. Now, he's 21, so the age works because he was held back when he was a kid. But still, it's like the Jake Bentley thing. That's a year of high school football you didn't get. That's a lot of reps. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of snaps. That's a lot of things that you see, a lot of learning. He didn't get it. So I just think that there's a lot about him that people don't know and people don't understand. And a lot of it's going to help lead him to probably be a really good college football player. Do you guys believe that the worst thing I've seen is the shrimp tail and the Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Yes, to me it is.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah. It's up there.
Well, let's get more food items in the worst thing I've seen then. Canberra, Australia. A man by the name of Alex White went to the grocery store, purchased groceries, came home. Pulled out the lettuce wrapped in plastic that he had just purchased from a Sydney supermarket. And he said he was looking in and he thought that he saw a worm moving around in the plastic wrapped lettuce. Until he saw a tongue flicker out from the front of the worm.
Oh.
He said, quote, I kind of completely freaked out when I saw this little tongue come out of its mouth and start flicking around and realized it was a snake because, well, worms don't have tongues. He said, I definitely kind of panicked and then it got worse. Turns out it was a venomous, pale-headed snake that authorities say made a 540-mile journey to Sydney from a packing plant in the Australian city of Toowoomba, wrapped in plastic with two heads of coast lettuce. The refrigerated supermarket supply chain likely lulled the cold-blooded juvenile into a package of lettuce, and then when bought the lettuce at the inner city Aldi supermarket on Monday, rode his bike home with the salad and the snake in his backpack. Now, he and his partner, Amelia Neat, spotted the snake moving as soon as the lettuce was unpacked on the kitchen table. They also noticed the plastic wrapping was torn and that the snake could have escaped if he would have found it. Quickly stuffed it back in to the package and then into a bag and called authorities.
Man, as if you don't have enough to worry about over there.
Yeah, now you got the venomous snakes in your lettuce. How much would just this one instance change your purchasing habits at the grocery store?
At least for a while.
Now, there's a reptile coordinator named Gary Patterson that was asked about this situation, and he said that even though it was less than 8 inches long, it was, quote, as venomous as it ever will be.
Yeah, those are the ones you have to worry about. Is the small venomous snakes, the babies, because they don't know how to control their venom, and they'll use it all on you. Whereas a larger, from what I understand, more adult venomous snake will save some of that venom.
Now, just to make everyone feel better about this, Aldi did release a statement, and
they're not charging for carts.
Oh no, just to put your mind at ease, they said, quote, we've worked with the customer and the team at Wires to identify the snake's natural habitat, which is certainly not an Aldi store.
So we're going to...
If anybody ever deserved a kick between the legs and a GFY, it would be the dude that released that statement from Aldi after a snake that could have killed me was found in my lettuce.
I think I'd have to swear off vegetables for like a year after that. Just
it'd be tough, man. I do remember a place I used to get pine straw from in my yard. They had had two shipments that had come in where somebody had found a copperhead in their bale of pine straw when they were going to put it out.
Now, the gentleman that I told you about, Gary Patterson, who's the reptile coordinator at Wires, that is a rescue organization for snakes. He is actually caring for the snake currently.
Oh, well, that's good.
That's nice.
And he will return it to Queensland next week. But also, Mr. Patterson was asked further about actually finding the snake in the lettuce, and he said, it's the first snake I've ever had in sealed packed produce. We get frogs in them all the time.
Well, yeah, that's different.
I just have to say, maybe we're cutting out the salads, honey.
Yeah.
No more.
Nope. We're going to go and, we're going to get our vegetables. They're not going to be fresh. They're going to be canned. That way, you know, at least anything you find in a can is probably dead from the lack of oxygen.
Yeah. So I would, no more lettuce for us. If I find multiple frogs and then a venomous snake in my lettuce, we're moving on to something else.
Man, I watch these shows over that take place, and these tatted up girl and guy that go and they remove these venomous snakes, nuisance snakes. Yeah, tatted up.
Just what website was that?
Tats. They're crazy. Oh, it's not a website. It's a show. and they go over and they remove these.
So it's a series.
Snakes.
The lady with tats playing.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
With the snake.
People are like, oh, got another brown mamba, black mamba in my house.
It's one of those.
Just pick it up. Yeah.
Just his snake or
come
other
on.
People's?
Yeah.
She likes them all, though. She likes all kinds, though.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Black mamba, brown mamba.
I have not seen that show.
It's progressive.
Pale-headed snake.
Very progressive.
Three-man front. Weekdays 10 till 2 on Jocks 94.5, JocksFM.com, and the Jocks mobile app.